Right, we're going to talk about a subject today that it may be a little bit heady, maybe a little bit intellectual. If it sounds like I'm trying to be profound when I'm up here, it's not me, it's just a profound thought. It's not my thought, it's a thought that existed long before I ever existed. And we're going to try to establish this principle so that we can use it in our lives, so that we can use it to look at some other things, other areas where perhaps when it wavers, when belief in this concept wavers, we make bad choices, we make mistakes. And it's real simple. God is. We're going to tie that together with the concept of truth, that God is, therefore truth is. In case you haven't noticed, human opinions tend to change. They tend to change with the time, the place, with the year. And why not start off with some very serious discussion here? Hairstyles. Anybody remember any of these? Back in the 80s, we saw a lot of the spiky hair, mohawk, maybe some in the 90s. There's the Richard Dean Anderson mullet, which was supplanted by the Billy Ray Cyrus mullet eventually. And hopefully none of us here remember the Julius Caesar. I know we remember the big hair of the 80s. And we probably don't remember the extravagant facial hair of the Civil War. But these are bygone styles. They don't exist anymore. They're not things that people are walking around with commonly today because our opinions as a whole have changed. Automobile styling. You know, back in the late 50s, this was what a car looked like. Probably weighed four times what our cars do now easily. Late 90s, early 2000s, hot rods, big engines. We were pumped up on horsepower, and then we got guilty. And we decided that we needed smaller cars that were more fuel economical. But that's going to change. It won't be that way forever because our opinions on the matter will change. Architecture. You know, I like to say, if the Egyptians lived in pyramids, we all know they didn't, but it's funny to say. We live in houses that look like the one down below. But our concept of what a building should look like, it varies from culture to culture, place to place. If you're waiting for the Hellbot Comet to turn, you might live in something like this. Our opinions differ when it comes to architecture. How about the popularity of people? This is one area which really, really obvious. You may know who that is. That's a younger George Washington, probably what he looked like during the time of the Revolutionary War, as opposed to what he looked like on our dollar bill. But George Washington was not a popular person per se in Great Britain. But look at what he means to our country. Look at what he's done for America. Anybody know who this is? There was a time and place when this guy really, really would have mattered to you. Thomas Alva Edison. This is him before he invented the light bulb. Nobody cared who he was. The opinion of him was not high in esteem. He turned into a gray-haired old man. But ultimately, he changed the face of how we live and interact, how we deal with daylight and darkness. And he's expanded our world into where we could actually work and read and study and do all kinds of things by the invention of the electric light bulb. This gentleman here, you probably don't know, this is William F. Lamb. He is the architect of the Empire State Building. If you lived in New York during just before the Great Depression, you would have said, you know, this guy, he's a big deal. He's really important. He designed the Empire State Building with his firm in just under 2 weeks or somewhere around that time. And that building was then an icon and is still to this day of what's capable with engineering. But today we really don't recognize him by face. He doesn't mean much to us. I don't think I need to say his name, do I? I don't even like to say it, really. He's left his mark on our culture today, but what's he going to mean in 100 years? What's he going to mean in 5 years? Our opinions will have shifted, and we'll no longer be concerned with Justin Bieber. Everybody see that all right? You tell what that is? That's sand. You know, probably some little beetle has walked across the ridge there and disturbed it, and now he's begun this little landslide here. Because sand moves quite easily. It's driven by the wind, it's driven by very small forces, and it tumbles down upon itself. And it's not a very good foundation. This picture kind of illustrates that point for us. Human opinions change, and the opinions of man are fickle and shifting, much like sand. They will not remain. They will not hold up at the test of time. The statements and assertions of man are absolutely not solid because men themselves are not solid. The teachings of mankind are ever-changing to suit the situation. Man-made ideas are here today and often gone tomorrow. And our creations and inventions have no eternal value. That one kind of stings when we say that. Our inventions, our creations have no eternal value. This is what Jesus meant when he spoke of the danger of building on the sand. We probably have sung songs about that, certainly sat in Bible studies about the idea of building on either rock or building on sand. And to build on human concept is to build on something that's going to change. The Bible likens us to a vapor, that man is like a vapor. And we can extrapolate out of that that his ideas are very similar. They're just for a moment. We talk about that because I intend to paint a contrast. I want us to see a stark difference. We're flippant. We're vague. We're here and gone. But God is. And Jesus wept maybe the shortest verse in the Bible, but I can tell you this statement here is the shortest and most profound two words that can be put together, that God is. God has always been. He will always be. He refers to himself from the time he began a relationship with Abraham as the Almighty, to the time that we see the last words in Revelation, where he refers to himself as the Almighty, the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end. The point is, God is. And he exists apart from all creation. And he's not affected as far as he is by us. God has always understood himself. This is something that's unique about God. He's always understood himself, and he's always understood what he wants. Can you say that about yourself? I certainly cannot. I look at who I was yesterday, who I was a month ago, who I was a year ago, and I say, wow, I am nothing like God. I still have so much further to go to get figured out what I really need to be. God knew who he was before we ever existed. And it's important that we understand that. It's important that we understand that God was complete, and he is complete, and he was, and he is before we ever existed. God completely understood righteousness and holiness before he ever conceived or created us. And God understood what was sinful and how to save us from it before he formed us. That's pretty amazing. God is unique. There's no learning curve with God. And we talk about that a lot at work. When somebody starts a new task, they have to figure out how to do it. And they may get one done an hour at first, and hopefully they increase to 5, and then 10, and then 30, and so on. Because there's this curve as they figure out how to do what they're doing. There's no learning curve with God. God knows what he's doing. There's no trial and error with God. God never tries something and makes a mistake and then says, okay, well, I'm going to make an improvement because I've analyzed this mistake that I made. That's not how God works. God just is. Preparedness, completeness, perfection, adequacy, and holiness. These are words that describe God because God is. God's character is fixed. Can't say that about ourselves, can we? Our character is changing, hopefully improving, but it could be devolving, could be getting worse. God's character is fixed, and he does not evolve or change. James chapter 1, verse 17, we read this verse a lot in relation to what God's given us. It says, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and comes down from the Father of light, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning. Now we need to be careful not to misunderstand this verse to say that somehow God doesn't care what you have to say. God doesn't care about your opinion. It's not that God doesn't want to hear from us. It's that God already knows what's right and what's wrong. If you're praying to God and asking him to change something about himself, well, you're praying in vain. God's not going to change who he is. There is no variation. There is no shadow of turning. He is, and he is the same. God's existence, character, power, and righteousness are not validated or diminished by the belief or opinion of mankind. Now think about that. It doesn't matter what we think about God. It does not change who he is or what he'll be or what he's been in the past. He's not proven, substantiated, verified, justified, vindicated, authenticated, ratified, or certified by man. Because God is. He's not discredited. He's not decreased. He's not lessened. He's not reduced, moderated, belittled, defamed, deprecated, run down, demeaned, cheapened, or devalued by man or by anything that we can do, because God is. God's worth and value have no relationship to the number or quality of the people that believe or disbelieve in Him. God's worth and value have no correlation to the number or quality of people that obey Him or disobey Him, because God is. God's worth and value bear no proportionality. Proportionality, this is a little mathematical term here for those of you that like to think of things in those terms. To the number of people that love Him and the number of people that hate Him. You see, God still is, regardless of how many are on His side or how many are against Him. God still is. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 15 through 16, second half of verse 15, the writer says, "He who is blessed is the blessed and only potentate, the King of kings and the Lord of lords, who alone has immortality, dwelling in unapproachable light." Now, I don't know if we grasp that. It's a difficult concept to grasp that God is there in this place that where we can't approach Him. We can't come near Him in His perfection, in His existence, in His holiness. The only way to come to Him is by the means that He's established. But the point is, God is. Nothing can approach Him that He doesn't summon or that He doesn't allow. Nothing can affect who God is. If the entire world believes in Him or if the entire world disbelieves, He still is. There is nothing anyone can do to increase or to decrease the reality of who God is. God simply is. That's a lot of words to just establish a small point. And there's a lot more that could be said on this topic, but I want us to understand that that's the God that we deal with. God knows exactly what should happen and what shouldn't happen. He knows exactly what you should be and what I should be. And He doesn't need advice from us. He doesn't need advisors from among mankind. And the point I want us to draw from that is that if God is, then truth is. And I'm not talking about truth like Paul's wearing a blue shirt. I'm talking about truth as in spiritual truth, things that are established by God, truth that proceeds from God. And the fact of the matter is that meaningful truth proceeds from God. John 17:17, a verse that we use a lot and we often recall. "Sanctify them by your truth," Jesus says as He prays to His Father. He says, "Your word is truth." Recognizing God as the source of truth. Truth has its existence because of who God is. God's words are His spirit spoken. They are His thoughts spoken out loud to us. This is the kind of truth that we're discussing this morning. Truth that comes from the mind of God, from the character of God. John chapter 6, verse 63, the second half, it says, "It is the Spirit who gives life, the flesh profits nothing. The words that I speak to you are spirit, and they are life." And we could throw in there as well, and truth. God's words are spirit and truth, and they are a manifestation of His character. God has freely shared His thoughts with us in the form of the truth of His Word. And so we have that from God given to us. 1 Corinthians chapter 2 kind of explains this whole concept, something that we might understand intuitively about each other, but he puts it in plain speech for us to understand about ourselves and about God. He begins, "However, we speak wisdom among those who are mature, yet not the wisdom of this age," in other words, not that which is shifting and changing, "nor of the rulers of this age who are coming to nothing, but we speak the wisdom of God in a mystery, the hidden wisdom which God ordained before the ages for our glory, which none of the rulers of this age knew, for had they known, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. But it is written, eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor have entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for those who love Him. But God has revealed them to us through His Spirit. For the Spirit searches all things, yes, the deep things of God. For what man knows the things of a man except the spirit of the man which is in him? Even so, no one knows the things of God except the spirit of God. Now we have received not the spirit of this world, but the spirit who is from God, that we might know the things that have been freely given to us." And he just ties this together, you know, lest there be some misconception that somehow the things that we read in the Bible are different than what God thinks. or that they've come from some other place. He says, no, the things that we've had revealed to us in the Scriptures are the thoughts of God. They are God's Spirit spoken out loud. They're Him revealing His thoughts and His ideas and His mind to us so that we know where they came from. We know their source. And that truth is because God is. Good and true things proceed out of God's mouth because God is good. Truth comes out of God because God is true. Luke chapter 6 and verse 45 establishes this principle as Jesus speaks about men, but the idea didn't come out of thin air. It came from God. He says, a good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart brings forth evil. And here's the principle. For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. You see, God can't help but speak truth. It's who He is. It's what is abundant in his heart, inside of Him, in His Spirit. And so God speaks based on who He is. Therefore, God is, and truth is. Truth is a permanent consequence of God's character. Now think about that for just a moment. Truth is a permanent consequence. It's irrevocable. It cannot be repealed. It can't be undone. It can't be taken back. It's a consequence. It is a necessary conclusion because of who God is and His personhood being shared with us. When God shares, it is only truth, and the truth only comes from God. Truth is because God is. You cannot have one without the other. Truth is immutable. That's just a fancy way of saying it's unchangeable. It's unyielding. And it is unchangeable and as unyielding as God's character because it's based on God's character. There are some principles that mankind can break, and there are some principles that mankind will break themselves against. Let that sink in for just a moment. There are laws, there are principles, there are things out there we can violate. But there are some principles that we might try to press upon them, we might try to force upon them, but ultimately we will break only ourselves. And that's what we're talking about when we're talking about God's truth. That's what we have to understand when we understand the nature of the truth of God. That God's truth can be forced upon, it can be pressed against, but it cannot be broken. Ultimately, we will break ourselves against God's truth. Truth simply is because God is. Now we're going to get into a few items where the rubber meets the road. This is application. This is where we take this principle and we look at it in things that we discuss in our world, in our culture, in our life. And yes, it says they're often debated and hated, yet always unabated truths. Pulling a little inspiration from Al Sharpton there, I guess. If it rhymes, it must be true. Just a joke. For you kids out there. Yeah, there are things we debate all the time. There are things we hate to hear. There are things that our culture hates to hear. But it doesn't change anything about the truth of the matter. Because these truths are enduring. Because they didn't come from man. They're not affected by man. And they can't be modified by man. Because they came from God. Speech and words. Well, what do people say about speech and words? People say it doesn't really matter how we speak or what we say. Say what you feel, right? If you're thinking it, you might as well say it. Use your words as a tool to gain power, to gain access, to gain influence. But God says, for by your words you'll be justified, and by your words you'll be condemned. Jesus gives us warnings about every idle word that we might speak. But we receive further warnings that if a man refuses to bridle his tongue, that his religion is useless. That his dedication to God, his devotion to God is of no effect because he refuses to exercise self-control with regards to his words. This is a common debate for us. Who's right? Do we trust our culture? Do we trust the sand that's built upon? The ideas that are here today and gone tomorrow? Or do we side with the Almighty? God is, and so truth is, but we better side with that which is solid. We better side with God's opinion. How about marriage? Marriage is something that's up for debate in our country right now among those that think that marriage is a debatable topic. It's something that's going to be shortly, there's going to be a decision made whether the Supreme Court's going to hear it. Unless I'm a little bit behind, they may have already decided whether they're going to hear the case. But there may be an opportunity for a ruling to come out of the Supreme Court as far as what the states of our United States have to recognize marriage to be. People say anyone of any gender can get married if they love each other, right? Because it's all about love. We hear that in our culture today. It's all about love. That's the only thing that matters. And consequently, we have people trying to marry multiple partners. We have men trying to marry men, women trying to marry women. We have people trying to marry their animals now. Because, hey, it's all about love, right? That's man's opinion on the topic. But God says, have you not read? I love that beginning there. Have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, for this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So there's our formula, one man, one woman in marriage, straight from the mouth of Jesus, straight from the mouth of God, straight out of the immutable, unchangeable truth. What about divorce? People say it's no big deal. If you're not happy, you should leave. If you're not being treated right, you should leave. Just, you know, if this one's not working out for you, get rid of them, and maybe one day you'll get another one. But God says what God has joined together, let not man separate. Two stark contrasting points of view about marriage. One that says it's an easy, casual thing to move in and out of. Another that says, no, it's from God, and it's not to just be changed based on the will of man. Who do we side with? Sexuality. People say that it's a means of expressing yourself and of building commitment with a boyfriend or girlfriend. In other words, taking it to the next level. And you can receive this human worldly advice from TV shows, from friends, from people that are quote-unquote professionals in the realm of giving advice. They'll tell you that, yeah, it's a necessary part of building commitment. But God says it goes in this order, commitment, then marriage, then sex. And God says in Hebrews, your marriage is honorable among all, and the bed undefiled, but fornicators and adulterers God will judge. Squarely and clearly putting sexuality and sex inside of the confines of marriage. Not wherever we want it, not how we want it, but inside of a committed, married relationship. Who do we trust? Abortion. That's another one that has some legal standing where basically the country as a whole has been handed down a decision from men that are called wise, men that are called good judges. People say abortion is a right and a necessity, and especially, here's the one that, you know, we'll even gather up some of the people that call themselves Christians, and especially in cases of rape or incest. In other words, I'm not one of those people that says, hey, abortion for anything, anytime, but you know, there's a special time when I think it's okay. It's okay to do it. And this pretty well typifies what many in America will think and say. But God says, cursed is the one who takes a bribe to slay an innocent person. And I want us to understand, I don't believe that the focus here is the bribe. The focus here is the taking of innocent life. But as far back as Deuteronomy, as far back as God has been revealing himself to mankind, God has been just pleased with the flippant taking of innocent life. There's even another principle that's established in Exodus. It basically states that if two men are fighting, and in the consequence of their fighting, they injure a pregnant woman so that she gives birth prematurely. If the baby's unharmed, then basically there'll be some type of discretionary punishment administered. But if the baby dies, then they are to take life for life. If an accidental abortion is committed, then the offender's life is to be given for the life of that child. That's in Exodus 21:22, if you're interested. So how do we go from saying an accidental abortion is evil and sinful and wrong to saying, you know, abortion on demand is fine? Now, when we trust our opinions, when we trust the opinion of the circumstance of the moment over the truth, the enduring truth of the Almighty, we can get on the wrong side of the issue. And I'm telling you, this is a powerful one. This is the one that is sweeping up a lot of people and dragging a lot of people away from God's ideas, God's principles on this topic. God and righteousness. What do people say? Well, there are many righteous paths that lead to God. There are many acceptable gods. There's just a few of them. This is like the top three or four or five religions that you might find in the world. There are people out there that say, you know, Krishna is just as good a God as Jehovah, Shiva, Buddha. Some people worship angels. Some people worship saints. Some people worship Allah. Some people worship, this is a Japanese God. I had to, get the pronunciation offline last night. It's something like Amaterasu. But there are people out there that say that all these gods are just the same. They're perfectly equal. You can find a path to enlightenment, to heaven, to everlasting life through any of these paths. But God says there is one God, specifically one Lord, and one faith, and that there is salvation in no other name but Jesus. That's Ephesians 4 and Acts 4. So God says He's the only God. Jehovah, the God of creation, is the only one. There are no other gods out there. And that there is only salvation in the name of His Son, Jesus. So what happens to us when we get into a conversation at work and somebody says, you know, I think that you can be saved over here just as well as you can inside of Christianity. Do we waver? Are we changed? Are we affected? And I'm here to tell you that all of these concepts, all of these ideas can affect us. Because we're not God, we're human. We can be swayed. We have to hold fast to the truth that exists because God exists. What about the way we dress? It seems in our culture it's almost something that people give very little thought to with regard to responsibility. But people say modesty is an old-fashioned and an obsolete idea. Some people say, you know, modesty was just a way of controlling women. People will go so far as to say that women and men should be proud of their bodies and show off what they've been given or what they've worked for. In other words, put it on display for all to see. Show everybody what you have. And that's everywhere. But God teaches that men and women should be holy everywhere. And that they should dress in such a way that it does not overshadow or contradict or take away from their commitment to God. And this is my thought down here. If people notice your exterior above all else, you should dress more modestly. God says that the thing that people should notice about us is our commitment to Him, our character, who we are, not what we look like. And just think on this for a moment. Have you been sucked up in this? Have you lowered your standard of modesty? Have you lowered your standard of how you present yourself because of the majority opinion of the culture and the people around us? And I can tell you, it's one of those things, if you look from culture to culture, from nation to nation, this is an area where we affect one another. We absolutely, our opinion is absolutely affected, and we affect one another's opinion based on how we dress and how we react. We need to stick with God on this. The roles of husbands and wives. Well, people say, even psychologists will tell us this, that there are no defined roles within marriage. You might even receive this advice from a quote-unquote marriage counselor today, that there are no defined roles within marriage. Anyone who thinks that marital roles are assigned by gender is unenlightened and is just, frankly, a simpleton. That's the advice of our culture, that it's old-fashioned to think otherwise. But God says the husband is the head and the leader of the wife, and that the husband must love his wife as Christ loves the church. And that wives must submit and respect their husbands. And as our culture pulls on us, I ask you, do you allow your firm grasp on God's truth to be degraded, to be diminished by the influence of our culture? It's easy to do. What about love? Love is something that is a word that's thrown around in our culture today. You hear about it in song, you hear about it on TV, you hear about it used in the wrong way in so many wrong contexts. People have an attitude towards love of, what's in it for me? People have an attitude towards love of, I'm going to get what I want out of it. Love is a close means to an end for so many people in our world today. That love is something you say so that you get what you want. It's a tool that you use for leverage to try to move somebody in a direction you want them to move try to ultimately manipulate them to do what you want them to do, but you couldn't just come right out and say, hey, do this. Love has been turned in so many ways into manipulation. It's been misdefined. But God says, this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than to lay down one's life for his friend. See, in God's definition, love is not defined by what you get out of it, but it is defined by sacrifice. It is defined by what you sacrifice for the person that you say that you love. And sin. And I just want to say that this is the last item we're going to look at. But how many blanks could we fill in on this discussion? How many items, debated items, hated truths could we fill in on this discussion? So this is one that has been under debate and has been discussed since the beginning of time. Sin. People say, you'll not surely die. Where do we get that from? Where do we get that idea from? I heard that was excellent. Good answer. Thank you. That's straight from Satan. It's straight from the devil. But see, when we try to tailor truth to fit us, whose side do we find ourselves on? Whose answers, whose ideas do we find ourselves pulling on to suit our situation? None other but the serpent himself, Satan. People say sin won't kill you. Sin just, you know, it's not really any difference between sin and righteousness. You know, just do what you feel, and it'll all work its way out in the end. It's no big deal. But Jesus, the Son of God, says, therefore I said to you that you will die in your sin, for if you do not believe that I am He, you will die in your sin. That's the New Testament statement of if you sin, you die. There's only one solution for that, and it's Christ. So sin brings death. Doesn't matter what the world says about it. Error, moving away from the truth, brings death. It doesn't matter what the world's opinion on that is. It doesn't matter what other people say. Here's your thought question. Does the majority opinion of mankind weigh against God's truth? Does the majority opinion of the United States Supreme Court weigh against God's truth? Does the majority opinion of everybody that's ever existed weigh against God's truth? Absolutely not. Because God is. And because God is, truth is. And because God's character is established, truth is established. And it doesn't change, it doesn't evolve, it doesn't morph. Definitions matter to God. And we're not at liberty to modify or redefine what God has stated or established. God holds fast to truth as the world tries to redefine right and sin. Romans 1:18, somebody mentioned this verse, I think it was last week, if not in the week before that. That in Romans chapter 1, this statement is made that the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth and unrighteousness. So not only does God not look favorably towards those that suppress His truth, He has wrath, He has anger, He has judgment stored up waiting for those that suppress and try to modify His truth. Because it is an insult against who He is to insult His statements and His truth. Matthew 5:18. Jesus said, for surely I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, one jot or one tittle will by no means pass from the law till all is fulfilled. Whoever therefore breaks one of the least of these commandments and teaches men so shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever does and teaches them, he shall be called great in the kingdom of heaven. Just a further statement from the mouth of God that nothing is going to change. It's not going to be eroded and affected by the weathering of mankind. It's not going to be pushed around by the wind of the heat of our breath as we spout off and say all of these foolish things about what we believe truth is. It's not going to be moved. In Matthew 7:24-27, the premise, the idea of this entire lesson. Therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine, Jesus says, and does them, I will liken him to a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it did not fall, for it was founded on the rock. It was founded on the truth. But everyone who hears these sayings of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain descended and the flood came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it fell, and great was its fall." Now, I always find it ironic that in something that we find, or we see as a children's verse, a children's story, the most important of all truths is revealed and related to mankind. That if you do what God says, you will endure and you will have eternal life. If you ignore Him, then you will suffer and you will be destroyed. And there are no other options. Now, I got to thinking about mankind's physical accomplishments as I was putting this lesson together. And you can look around and you can see all these things in the stuff that we've done. We can move mountains. Mountains have been torn down because they were in the way of development. And scoop by scoop, dump truck by dump truck, they've been removed. Valleys have been filled in because they didn't suit our geographical plan. And they've been filled in. We've drained lakes. We've rerouted rivers. We've bridged massive expanses. We've built islands. As a kind of coincidence, that's where one of the mountains went. They tore down the mountain, stuck it in the ocean, now it's an island. Perhaps even one day, and some might say we have the technology today to colonize other planets. That we have the technology today, even the plans in the works to shift orbiting bodies. They're going to fly something up to a meteorite, see if they can change its orbit just so they can say, hey, check that out. We can do all this stuff. We can affect so many things in our physical world. We can push and shift and move the things that we don't like, the things that we want reordered. But we cannot affect the truth one iota, one jot, or one tittle. God is, therefore truth is. And that's the conclusion of this lesson. That's what I wanted to understand about this, that every bit as solid as God is the truth of His Word, is the truth of the statements He's made to us. God is solid. The truth is solid. Don't let the world sweep you away. Don't let the world press upon you. If you build on the world's philosophies, the world may establish you, but the world will also tear you down. It will also relocate you. It will also push you over that sandy precipice to your destruction. God is, therefore truth is, build on the rock. The lesson is yours. Look at yourselves against what we've just talked about. I know when I think about the fact that God is and truth is, I find myself not exactly adequate, not exactly ready to measure up to Him. But it's times like these that we're called on to reflect upon ourselves. It's times like these that we're called upon to ask ourselves those difficult questions of, have I allowed the world to write in between the lines of God's commandments in my heart? Have I allowed the world to erase and modify what I believe and what I hold as truth? Have I been affected by this world? I feel certain all of us have in some way. It's a continual battle of dumping and bailing the water out of the boat that we call our lives. But if you're here this morning and you need our help, with realignment. You need our help with prayer, with encouragement, with support. And that's what God designed the church for. It doesn't matter what anybody else has turned the church into. God designed this church and His church as a means to worship Him and to support one another in growing closer to Him. And that's what we intend to do here. So if you're a Christian, you need our help. Or if you're not a Christian and you're ready to join in with God today, you're ready to link yourself to the Almighty, to the Eternal One, to the One who always has been and always will be.